Amy Hoffman left her job at the mall one night, expecting to go home. But she never did. 2 weeks later, a different woman comes running out of the woods, desperate, terrified, stabbed, and bleeding. She makes it to a trucker, knowing she's close to the end, and tells him everything she can so her killer's caught. By the time police understand what they're dealing with, this killer has blended back into his New Jersey surroundings. This is the story of Amy Hoffman and Deidre O'Brien. Hello, everybody. I'm back, says Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime. And it's another craft and story time. This story is, they're all awful, right? But this one, it's another one, like, it could have been avoided, most definitely, and we'll get into that. But I'm working on my nostalgia piece. She has one ear. There's a reason for that, okay? It is for a purpose. So, but I'm working on her little shorts. So it's going to look like I'm crocheting upside down. Well, I am, but it's because I have to, you know. You always work up what's easy to work up. So that's how I'll be crocheting. So our story takes place in Parsippany, New Jersey. It's November 23rd, 1982. And Thanksgiving is coming up. Amy Hoffman was adopted and moved to the States at 5 years old, where she grew up and later became a cheerleader at Parsippany Hills High School. And she, all around, was a great kid. She was dependable. She was honest. She was well-liked. And she seemed to do what she was supposed to do and didn't seem to like to disappoint anybody. She was a reliable teenager. She's very happy-go-lucky, and by all accounts, her friends adored her. On this fateful day in November of 1982, just before Thanksgiving, Amy finishes up cheer practice. She takes two of her friends home. She gives them a ride. Then she heads to her job at the Morris County Mall. She works her shift, but she never makes it home. So when hours go by and we're past the usual and understandable time for Amy to be home, her mother becomes very worried. She knows something's wrong because this just isn't like Amy. So she jumps in her car and drives to the mall to see if what's going on. Maybe she has a flat tire. Maybe her car broke down. And this is, I'm sure, what you're hoping for when your child doesn't make it home. But that's not the case for Amy's mother. When she arrives at the mall parking lot, she sees Amy's car in the parking lot all by itself. Her keys are still in the ignition, and her purse is in the passenger seat. Those last two details are everything. It means that Amy didn't walk away from her car voluntarily. Amy was interrupted while trying to get into her car. She's been taken. Amy's mother calls the police, and an investigation begins. The next day at school, Amy's friends are distraught. Word starts to go around that she didn't make it home. Her boyfriend's on the football team. He's concerned. Her friends are concerned. And this is a tight-knit community, so her friend's parents are very concerned. They're concerned about their own children, how their children are handling this, but they care about Amy too. So this town is really sitting on edge, and they're nervous. It could have been anybody's kid. The next day after that is Thanksgiving, and this is wild to me, I guess, because over here in Texas, if we have any games near Thanksgiving, I would assume it's more of a playoff game, but they actually have a Thanksgiving game. And the school is really feeling this absence and this I mean, it's not just that she's ill or anything. It's a sinister absence. It's scary. So the football coach has to have a conversation with the team and explain to them that if you're not up to this, if you're struggling, there's more to life than a game, which is commendable. Here in Texas, they probably would have told him to get over it because football's life here. But the coach was very understandable because he was worried too. He too was part of this community. He knew Amy. But of course, you're not allowed to show you're scared when you're the adult. You hold the fort. You trudge on so the kids can feel. Ugh, my bags. At the game, her cheer squad leaves her megaphone and her palms in her spot to honor her. They get through the game. And these poor kids then have to go to Thanksgiving dinner and Thanksgiving, you know, the early dinner and everything. And I'm sure there's like a sick feeling to their stomach because you just want to know where your friend is. You want to know she's okay. You know the circumstances of how she went missing. And that's a tough thing to acknowledge and really face. But that night, whatever hope is still floating around ends. Amy Hoffman has been found dead by a couple who were taking a walk with their dog. Her body is discovered in a retaining tank in what's called Randolph Township, in a very woodsy area. It's actually what used to be a reservoir and has been turned into a lover's lane. Very remote. When the body is discovered, officers are pretty sure that it's Amy, considering the clothes she's wearing match the description given when she was last seen. Upon examining the body, police learned that Amy was essayed, as well as stabbed multiple times. But Amy did put up a fight. This poor girl's fingers were nearly severed on one hand from fighting the knife that was used against her. There isn't really any other evidence left around her that they can use. But considering, again, this spot is so local and it's only known to locals because it's used as a lover's lane, they know the perpetrator has to be local. Because there's residents in this town that didn't know that reservoir existed. They have to be local to the area. Naturally, police start looking close to home. And the first person that they want to speak with is her boyfriend, Alex. They question Alex, but they also question all of her friends. They question all of the cheerleaders. They want to know if she had mentioned maybe anything weird happening to her. Maybe she was being stalked. They're trying to get as much information as possible to see if maybe there's something that can lead them in that direction. And there is something. Apparently, where these girls practiced, there was a payphone in the hallway. And recently, they had been receiving very strange phone calls. And when one of the girls would answer, he would ask for certain cheerleaders. He would, you know, be gross, say things, suggest things. And the police took this very seriously. This could be it. Maybe somebody's targeting cheerleaders. But it's a big surprise when these phone calls are able to be linked back to the assistant coach at Parsippany Hills High School. He's the freshman coach and apparently has this fixation with the cheerleaders. Murder or not, that's disgusting and terrifying. So there's a predator on the outside and in the inside, apparently. When police discover that it's him, they question him. His alibi is that he was grading papers and then he went to drop them off with another teacher. But when she's questioned, she tells them she never received any report cards. Then he says that he was having dinner with a friend. Well, police go and ask this friend. This friend says that he has not spoken to this man in over a year. So while police are doing further investigation into him, rumors start spreading. But because they also don't have anything tying him directly to Amy, and they don't want to get tunnel vision and just focus on him, they decide to go ask Amy's coworkers at the mall if they saw anything. And they did. They learn from her coworkers a man had been parked outside of the mall in a bluish green early model Chevy. They believed around 1970-ish. The car itself had damage in two different parts of the car. But the driver was creepy, that he had long curly hair and a bushy mustache. So this description of the man who was waiting in the parking lot that night Amy went missing, and the description of the car, neither one of these matched the coach that was making the weird phone calls. And this makes officers believe they're safe to no longer focus on the coach and focus on this man at the mall instead. I mean, really? I, for one, think that they should have still kept that man on the list because all of his alibis were falling through. Who's to say this man wasn't stalking one of the cheerleaders and was going to do something sinister himself? But with what happened to Amy, he decided to back off because he would lead them right to him. It foiled his plans. I really believe that. Sorry, my bangs are bothering me, but I really believe this. That man must have been up to something too. Why was he lying? I mean, maybe it was something, you know, less serious, like he was having an affair or something with someone's wife. I don't know. But it's very odd. The phone calls and the, you know, unaccounted for alibis, not looking good. But I digress. Then, less than 2 weeks later, on December 5th of 1982, in Alamuchi, New Jersey, a truck driver is resting in a secluded spot at a rest stop when a woman comes running out of the woods. She's frantic. She's terrified. She's bleeding and she starts pounding on his door. She's been stabbed. When he answers the door and offers to help her, she tells him, "I'm dying." She gives him as much information as she can in case she dies before the police get there and she's not able to give her statement to them. She says her name is Deidre O'Brien. She described her attacker as tall, skinny, bushy hair, facial hair, and as he looks around the parking lot, he sees a bluish, greenish Chevy leaving the parking lot. He is able to get Deidre help, but unfortunately she dies. And Deidre O'Brien was a 25-year-old waitress who was also beloved by her family. She was one of four siblings. She was an art history major. She just wanted to be a curator in a museum. And she never got to fulfill her dreams. She too had been taken, but from where? So apparently, Deidre's vehicle had been found a little while before she had made contact with the truck driver. Her car is found about 25 miles away. You can tell the car's kind of been rushed off the road. The car's on, her keys are in the ignition, and her purse is in the passenger seat. Everything is just like when Amy was taken. With this second occurrence, police go into overdrive. They urge the public, especially women, not to travel alone. They see an uptick in sales. Everybody's on high alert. Women don't want to go anywhere without their husbands. Women are carrying knives. Fathers aren't letting their daughters out of the house, rightfully so. Everybody's scared. Then a rumor begins to go around that the assailant is impersonating a police officer. And because the police department isn't able to discount this rumor, they have to advise their citizens to be wary of officers too. So they put out notices and alerts that if you're driving alone in a remote area, and an officer pulls behind you to pull you over, do not stop. Get to a well-lit public place. At the scene where Deidre's car is found, there is a very crucial piece of evidence found with her car that wasn't found anywhere near Amy, and that's a tire track. And it has this Z pattern. It's very distinct. And this helps them really narrow down their search. A nine early model 1970s Chevy, they're going to see quite a bit of those, but a tire tread, and it's a worn tire tread, that can help them narrow it down. Time goes by. Investigators are still working this case. They're not giving up. But then on January 16th, another call comes in. On January 16th of 1983, a man calls in stating that he's been stabbed. His name is James Kadatich. What a last name, Kadatich. It's fun to say. Kadatich. He says that he was pulled over by a man with a flashing light. He assumed it was an officer. And that when this man approached his vehicle, he just stabbed him. But investigators are kind of suspicious of this man, of James. When James calls the police and has the stab wound's not bleeding. So it's very obvious that this didn't happen and he called the police right away. So they find that a little odd. Kadatich is also very anxious and sweaty as they talk to him. And for the most part, they attribute this to being attacked, even though they're suspicious. They know, if he really was attacked, it could be very well shock, and that's why he's acting like this. But they're also one investigator is concerned about the fact that he's bald. It's very obvious that he just recently shaved his head. This is the 70s. That wasn't very common. And it's winter. It's fucking cold. So he was a little uneasy about this as well. And as EMTs are loading him onto a stretcher, a detective happens to look at his vehicle, just kind of glance over. And there he sees a dark green Chevy. With his interest piqued, he approaches the vehicle and looks at the tire. There he sees that this tire has Z pattern worn tread. James Kadatich is no victim. James Kadatich is the murderer. So, who is James Kadatich? James Kadadich was born in 1948. He was one of three kids, and his father was a real piece of shit. Would constantly beat his mother, slap her, at one point kicking her. Just not a good man. This was not a happy home. At one point, his father hospitalized his mother. He beat her that severely. That was his final beating to her, because then he abandoned his family, which, I mean, good riddance. Fuck that guy. Not much is known about what went on the years after that. Apparently, his mother did remarry. We don't know about the home life there with a new fatherly model. But in his late teens, he starts to get involved in petty crime. He's in and out of the system, but not for anything very serious, nothing violent. But he moves to Florida. And in Florida, James is arrested for robbery. While waiting trial in the county jail, he escapes. Oh my God, I'm splitting all this yarn. Look at this. Come on, Dusty. Days later, on his little escapement, he just strangles his roommate and hides his body in the closet. We don't know what provoked this attack, but he was caught and convicted for this crime. However, he only served 11 years. 11 years for murder is wild, like Florida. Jesus. I know this was like, what, 50 years ago? Almost. Yeah, 50 years ago, but ugh. How far we've come. Here's the part that I really don't understand, that where nobody heard this and was just like, oh, fuck. So he was offered parole after 10 years. And he decides to say no thanks to parole, because if he serves one more year, he can get out and not have any kind of supervision. He will have no parole and no probation. And you know what? I kind of get it when you just want to be left alone, but motherfucker's a murderer. Why nobody was like, oh shit, he's going to do something else. Yikes. Nobody thought of that. Everybody was like, okay, James. Makes sense. What the fuck? I need names. Because seriously, what? Anywho, so good old James, he's released August of 1982, and he gets his happy ass back to his hometown. So really, homeboy only lasted, what, 3 months? 3 months. And he's back to murdering. How no one saw this coming blows my mind. Oopsies. Oh, God. You look at this. Just split, split, split. You know, swing, swing from the All-American Rings Jacks. Split, split from Mexico Yard. Oh, Lord Shelby, you sang on YouTube. Okay, did that. I have a feeling her shorts are going to be crooked, but you know what? Happy accidents, like Bob Ross used to say. But, okay, so, where were we? James Kadadich, that piece of shit. Oh, yeah, okay, so, James Kadadich. When police search his car, they find items tying him to both victims. If they weren't sure then, they're sure now. So on January 19th of 1983, James Kadadich is arrested and charged formally for Amy and Deidre's murders. So police believe that he stabbed himself, because that was the other concern they had about the stab wound. It wasn't bleeding, and it was in a weird spot where it would be like more self-inflicted rather than someone stabbing you. So they're like, And he did all of this to cause a red herring, when really he just led them right to him. He just had to be a little star. And it also explains the newly shaved head. It was going around that he had curly hair, looking like Weird Al, and he couldn't have that. So he thought the shaving the hair thing makes sense. Calling police to your door, trying to pretend to be a victim. Okay, James, you do you. Got your ass cut. That's all that matters. So in 1984, he goes to trial for Amy's murder, and he's sentenced to death. However, the Supreme Court actually overturns his death sentence. Oops. He receives a life in prison sentence for that. For Deidre's murder, the death penalty is completely off the table, and he receives 30 years for that murder. Why the difference? I don't know. But he died in prison. That's what matters. I didn't even look up when he died because I don't care. So with James being sentenced to death, you know, good riddance, you filthy animal. The worst part, and it's always the hardest part, is before his life sentence, Amy's parents were sentenced. Deidre's parents were sentenced. All of their loved ones, their friends, their futures, what they could have been, all of it was sentenced to life before we even knew who James Kadatich was. Because while James is taken care of in a prison, or was, they're still faced with living the loss, living with only memories, living with the absence. Their life sentence is far harsher than what James got. But that is the story of the lovely ladies, Amy Hoffman and Deidre O'Brien, and the unfortunate circumstances of coming across James Kadatich. Working on the shorts, I've got one short leg going. It's going to come down to about here. That way I can roll it up because she folds hers up. If you don't know who I'm making, I feel like once you see what's going to go up here, it's probably going to give it away. Once I sew the hair on, that's going to give it away, especially because how many characters do you only see one ear on? I don't know, to be honest. I'm just asking. I could be very wrong. There could be tons. But yes, thank you for joining me at Craft and Storytime. Please tell your friends, get it out there. I'd love to go live on YouTube or TikTok if y'all can tell me what you prefer. If anybody prefers anything, haha. But yes, please, please like, share, subscribe. Let's get this whole craft community going. I keep moving my mic. I apologize why I'm even holding it. I don't know. But yeah, thank you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Let's make 2026 good, because I don't know about y'all, but 2025 has been a real bitch for me. 2026 is going to start ugly. So, but after that, let's hope for some happy times. Okay, bye.